relief factor, pain relief that's natural, pain relief that works, and pain relief that attacks the source of the pain. That's the experience of tens of thousands of Americans who are taking Relief Factor right now. See their incredible video endorsements at ReliefFactor.com and then order your three-week quick starter pack for just $19.95. That's less than a dollar a day. Find out if it can work for you like it works for me by ordering your three-week quick starter pack today. ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com. Be the next success story.
And we're doing America First Radio. And the theme of today's show is an ode to weapons of war. And I think in the perfect way to do that, I mentioned before that I was a Special Forces Weapons Sergeant. We now have a guest who also had that great distinction of being the most important person on a Special Forces A team. Nick Freitas, who represents the area around Culpeper, Virginia in the State Assembly. Good to have you on, Nick.
Hey, great to be on. Good to see you, Jim.
Yeah, and you also, as I was, were a member of 1st Group, 3rd Battalion 1st Group. And I think we've got another of our compatriots, Pete Crittenden, is going to be on later, who was both 1st and 2nd Battalion. The greatest of all groups, the greatest of all MOSs in the military was 18 Bravo. But I actually want to pick your brain a little bit. We are under assault right now. The assault leftists are attacking the Second Amendment, and they're doing so stupidly and in many ways that are unconstitutional. Is there anything though in Virginia happening that we need to know about? You know, are there any particular efforts underway, or do we have that kind of under control because the Commonwealth is now a free state?
Well, I'll tell you what, a lot changed. One of the things that was fascinating was 2 years ago when the Republicans were still in control, but Democrats had swept the House, they ran on this campaign of nobody wants to take your gun. We just want common sense gun control. And then they got into power and lo and behold, they went for straight up confiscation. Although they would say it wasn't confiscation because they weren't going to actually come to your home and take your guns. They were just going to criminalize you for owning them. Right. And they were doing this not just with AR-15s, they were doing with, you know, if you had a magazine that carried more than 12 rounds, you could have been a felon under the original drafting of the bill. So that was the sort of thing that they were trying to do. A lot of backlash because of that, because of educational and school choice issues in Virginia. So we got a Republican governor, Republican lieutenant governor, Republican attorney general, and the House of Delegates returned to the Republicans. And now I'm the subcommittee chairman for Public Safety Committee Gun Sub 1, right? So that's the subcommittee where all of the gun legislation goes to. I'm the subcommittee chairman for that one. And so we pride ourselves on doing everything we can to keep people safe while at the same time protecting our Second Amendment rights.
So instead of grabbing our guns, you just like go around issuing them to people, right? If I'm going to pay taxes in Virginia, I would be willing to subsidize guns for people who should have them, who can't afford them. You know, that might be one of those charitable things I could work out. Maybe we'll start a nonprofit to do that.
The Swiss model.
There you go. I mean, come on, everybody should have skin in the game. And I think that's a good thing. You know, we found out with Uvalde that you cannot rely on law enforcement in every case. And I don't mean to dog the cops. They have a job I took the chance to not do because I don't think I have what it takes to do it. But I think that also shows why the Second Amendment is important, because you're on your own, even if you've got police support, until they get there. And I think that's something we need to do some kind of evangelizing for among the people, don't you think?
Well, yeah, I think it's ridiculous that every time the government fails to protect you at a facility they manage, the Democrats' first response is, well, let's make it harder for people to protect themselves. Like, that makes no sense. But there it is.
Well, and we can rely on them for that, though. They will always come up with a solution that is not a solution to the problem. It is a way to enact the agenda they want. And they hate guns. They hate the Second Amendment. The whole thing drives them crazy. So they're willing to use any tragedy to go ahead and capitalize on that. And we're watching it now. And obviously, we've seen the president's speech last night. We've heard them talk about weapons of war. I don't know if you saw General Eaton's rant on Twitter, where he was former commander at Fort Benning, And he's now a vote vets leftist. And he's talking about how, okay, you know, the AR-15 and everything are weapons of war and civilians shouldn't have them. And I'm sorry, I just, in the opening segment, I explained weapons of war are what the Second Amendment expected us to have. Is that another place we're going to have to do some more evangelizing?
I think so. I think one of the biggest problems that we have is trying to educate people. And look, I've even had people come from the right saying, why are you even acknowledging their argument? Like, because I want a voting public to understand why we have the Second Amendment, and it's not for hunting. And it's not ridiculous for those of us who value the Second Amendment and why it was put into the Constitution in the first place to be able to go out there and educate people that really what this is about is two things. One, it's the founders recognizing that the only way that you could protect a free state was if free people have the ability to actually gather together and protect it. But the other reason why they enshrined an individual right to be able to own firearms is because you have an inherent right to be able to defend yourself, your family, your property. And any government that's seeking to drastically reduce or take that away from you, that's a government that they're not interested in representing citizens. They want to rule over subjects. But we're not subjects. And so it's not happening. But we need to make sure that people understand that actually the compassionate view is the one that says, I want someone that wouldn't otherwise be able to physically defend themselves to be able to have the means to protect themselves against the shot.
And I think you made the point that the left is not interested in strong-willed free people making decisions for themselves because they don't like the decisions we make. And consequently, they're looking for a statist top-down power model that says, we'll tell you what to do. Don't worry. You know, you don't have to think for yourself. You don't have to do for yourself. We will provide you with what you need and what you should have and no more or no less. And the idea that you should accept that rather than take responsibility for yourself is, I think, one of the main differences between the right and the left. We start from individual liberty. They start from state control. And I think they're showing their cards now in trying to take away the one right in the Constitution that protects all the rest.
No, I think that's accurate. I mean, when Alexis de Tocqueville first came over to the United States, and I think it was the 1830s, what he really recognized, what he was impressed with, was not just our system of government. It was the idea that we had this combination of rugged individualism with a strong sense of family and community. So it wasn't that we didn't think there was ever times for people to come together and work together to solve problems. We just find that that always starts with the first person responsible for you is you. And the first person responsible for your family is you and your family. And so empowering people to be able to make their own decisions, to work together in voluntary cooperation in order to solve problems, and to otherwise leave each other alone when we disagree, that's a hallmark of what it means to be an American and what it means to be free. I can't stand it when the left confuses democracy with freedom. You know, democratic processes may be very important to freedom, but it's not synonymous with freedom. You getting to live your life the way you want, free from government intervention or some political elite constantly trying to interfere, provided that you're not infringing on the liberties of somebody else, that's what it means to be free. Not getting to elect our political leaders every 2 to 4 years.
And I think that is something that in our evangelizing, and I think we have that responsibility because the schools no longer do it. You know, they have stopped teaching civics. They've stopped teaching all these things. And now it's incumbent on those of us who were taught, you know, and I think Generation X may be the last generation that was actually taught in school what our country was founded on, what those things meant, and how that is something that you were given the greatest gift. We were born on second base by being born in the United States of America as U.S. citizens. And that comes with not an obligated cost, but an implied cost. You owe something to the world and community for that. Hey, we're talking with Nick Freitas, who is a member of the Virginia House of Delegates and a former SF weapons guy. And after the break, I want to talk a little bit about the militia, because we've dealt with militias in other places, and I want to talk about what it means here in the United States. This is Jim Hansen, sitting in for Dr. G, doing America First Radio.
The Dear friends, you know my friend Mike Lindell has a passion to help everyone get the best sleep of their lives. He didn't stop by simply creating the best pillow. Now Mike has done it again by introducing his My Slippers. For a limited time, you'll get $90 off a pair of My Slippers. This blowout sale of the year won't last, so order now. They took over 2 years to develop. They're designed to wear indoor and out. I've already worn out my first pair of My Slippers, and they're made with the same amazing My Pillow foam and impact gel to help prevent fatigue and lined with real suede. Call 800-829-8468. Use promo code Gorka for that massive discount, or just go to mypillow.com and click on the radio listener square and put in the secret code G-O-R-K-A. This offer won't last long. You won't regret it. They are the best slippers I have ever owned. And $90 off MyPillow.com. Do it today. Promo code G-O-R-K-A. Welcome back to America First with our very special guest, Uncle Jimbo. It's Jim Hansen.
Hey, good to be back. We are back again with Nick Freitas, who is a member of the House of Delegates here in my Commonwealth of Virginia, which I now own, and also a former SF weapons guy. One thing we've both dealt with is irregular military forces and civilians with guns protecting their own world. And it can be kind of sketchy. I can tell you, one of the first places I went on a deployment was the Philippines, and we were teaching the Philippine police constabulary, which is kind of a military police hybrid. And I'm teaching them, okay, well, when you go to arrest, you know, insurgents in your village, how do you do it? They said, well, first we sight in the machine guns and we set up an L-shaped ambush and we fired everything, and then we go count the bodies and we release a press release of how many terrorists we killed. I'm like, okay, now, you know, allow me to offer an alternative, right? And we're dealing with, you know, some very different ways to do it. But even here in the United States, we have what should better be called the militia. It is known in the Second Amendment. It is referred to as the well-regulated militia, which is a source of much consternation for the left, because they want that to mean government controlled when it actually means well-trained and well-provisioned. But the militia is encoded in law. It is actually able-bodied citizens who could by themselves organize to act, or who could be called by the government to help in an emergency. Is that such a horrible thing?
I think it's been turned into a caricature of itself because of, you know, some of these groups that have come up that call themselves militias that, you know, I don't know if they really meet the criteria. But if you look at Article 1, Section 13 of the Virginia Constitution, we actually specifically lay out what the militia is. And like you said, it's able-bodied citizens between certain ages. And again, the whole purpose was to be able to come together to protect their own community and to be able to be called up for state action. And so I think when you look at it from that lens, no, I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. In fact, if you want to look at why the founders put into the Second Amendment a well-regulated militia being necessary for the security of a free state, it was because many of them had a real problem with the concept of a standing army and what that could potentially mean for tyranny or getting involved in wars that really were not in our best interest. And so the whole purpose of that sort of citizen service, that citizen militia force, was not only to be able to protect our community, protect our borders, but it was also in some ways to be able to push back against what they feared would be, you know, a standing army that could eventually be used against the American populace. That was their concern.
And the reason the Second Amendment gives us the individual right to have a weapon suitable for that is so that weapon's not under the control of a state entity or agency in any way, for that very reason. Whether it was so a standing army, if they decided that they wanted to go ahead and roll up the Bill of Rights, you know, and that whole free speech thing is encroaching on the bad feels of people, and you know, people are saying mean things, so we're going to take that away. Well, if you don't have guns to deter them, there's nothing to stop them. You know, at that point, they've decided that they have the power and the ability to shut down our rights. And the Second Amendment was to ensure, no, hold on. There is a last resort, and that is the individual citizen, the source of all governing power, is a grant from the citizen to the government. And the only way to enforce that was for us, we the people, to maintain that right.
Well, it's fascinating to me that the left now wants to rely exclusively, really not just on the government, more specifically the federal government, as the guarantor of rights and the defender of civil liberties. And I want to look at them and be like, wait a second, aren't you guys the ones that are constantly telling us to remember hard history? Okay, here's some hard history. It wasn't that long ago in the Jim Crow Democrat-controlled South where black families, the only mechanism that they had to be able to defend themselves, not just against the Klan, but against sometimes their own sheriff's departments, was the Second Amendment. It was their individual ability to be able to defend themselves and their families. So this idea that we have surpassed this time where the Second Amendment was necessary or the ability of citizens to be able to defend themselves is necessary because we're just so much more enlightened now. What a joke. The vast majority of atrocities that have been perpetrated against innocent people in world history took place within the last 100 years, and they were perpetrated by government. So look, I love the United States. I love our Constitution. I think as governments go, we got one of the best in world history. But I also think it's necessary, and in part because we have citizens that take their own rights very seriously and possess the means to be able to defend them and their rights.
Amen to that. And I think, again, in our new role that I have assigned you and myself and everyone else I'm going to deputize during the next couple hours, let's explain that. Let's give everybody an idea why that is. Great talking to you. Nick Freitas, House of Delegates, Virginia, Cole Pepa in particular, and also a former First Group Special Forces guy. Great talking to you, and keep up the fight, and don't let them start giving out them free guns, man.
You too, Jim. Thanks.
All right. This is Jim Hansen sitting in for Seb doing America First Radio. We'll be back after the break.
Second Amendment Friday on America First, brought to you by Carr Firearms.
Donald Trump believes America should always be first, and his patriotism rallied Americans in a manner never before seen. Carr Firearms Group loves America and shares President Trump's patriotism and passion for freedom. They have been making a truly beautiful line of custom engraved pistols to honor President Trump. And the latest one is just stunning. The Rally Cry 1911 pays tribute to President Trump's ability to draw Americans together. It is covered with engravings depicting MAGA rallies and the love of America shown by Trump supporters. The engraving is amazingly detailed with pictures of crowds, President Trump, his signature, and the American flag. There are little messages for fans hidden in the engraving, such as Let's Go Brandon and God Bless America. Keep in mind, these guns are not just art, they are shooters. Each one has a match-grade 45 caliber barrel, enhanced trigger, extended safety, skeletonized hammer, and True Glow night sights. These guns are made from stainless steel, 100% in the United States. To get one of your own, see your local dealer. You will definitely want the Rally Cry 9/11 in your collection. Well, hey, folks, it's Jim Hansen. I'm back. And I have, during the break, discussed with the crew here, and Seb Gorka and I are going to have to go Carr Firearms a-shooting. So we'll get some video of that, and we'll show you what these guns can do in action. But I'm joined now by someone who does this every day, is one of the leaders in the fight for our Second Amendment rights, and a member, one of the leaders of the Gun Owners of America, Eric Pratt. Welcome to the show, Eric.
Hey, thank you so much. It is great to be with you, Jim.
Well, it is a time for your organization's raison d'etre. They are coming for pretty much everything they can. They've got a whole raft full of mostly really bad, unconstitutional ideas. Is this something you think is going to make it, you know, I think it's coming out of the House, but is it going to make it through the Senate and, you know, try to actually turn itself into some kind of law?
We are working especially hard to make sure that senators don't jump on board any compromise. I mean, obviously, I know people can get a little bit dispirited when they see all the media, they see the lies, they see the push, they see what Congress is doing. But remember, as long as that filibuster is there, and it is, the anti-gun left has a really, really high hurdle to get over. And right now they don't have that. As we're talking right now, they don't have that. They don't have the 60 votes. So anyway, we're working hard to make sure that that's the way things stay, so that we're, you know, quite honestly, I don't believe even Biden thinks he can overcome that. All this is just political theater for them.
I hope you're right, and I think that matters. I think in the realm of political theater, there is a possible, you know, danger for we on the right. We can be right. We can be constitutionally correct. We can be fundamentally security-based correct. But this could cost us votes. It could cost us elections. I think that's why you get the Lindsey Grahams and the people on our side, you know, quavering a little bit about potentially caving in. I want to ask you a question, though. I had a discussion earlier about an idea to get the most important element of the D.C. versus Heller opinion, which codifies or rules that there is an individual right to own a weapon, that can be any weapon in common use, and that weapon should also be suitable for service in the militia. If we could get that added to some sort of gun control bill that did not have, you know, any, obviously an assault weapons ban, didn't have red flag, didn't have any of the, you know, the ridiculous ideas, maybe some additional background checks or something, you know, throw them some sort of bone, but nothing that matters. Would that be worth getting that in law through Congress, signed by the president, so that all three branches of government then have stamped our individual right to own guns?
Well, Jim, I'm sure you and I are probably going to agree on almost 100% of things, but I actually don't agree with your premise, which is that we have to throw, we have to compromise in order to kill this. In fact, that's one of the things that Gun Owners of America has done so successfully. You might remember right after the Sandy Hook shooting, we were then where we are now, where the entire media, the entire Democrat establishment, but I repeat myself, they were all saying now is the time, finally something has to pass. And there were a lot of Republicans who were you know, shaking in their boots, and they were, you know, remember the Manchin-Toomey compromise. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of Republicans who were supporting expanded background checks, which was what he was. And in the end, the New York Times and the Washington Post both credited Gun Owners of America with killing the legislation, and it wasn't through our persuasive words. It was because we rallied the grassroots, they contacted their legislators, and they heard from enough, especially the Republicans, heard from enough grassroots that they said, we can't support this, and every bit of legislation died. And I would just encourage people right now, whoever is listening, it is really important. You know, you go to our website at gunowners.org. We have alerts there. Email your senators. Pick up the phone and call your senator, 202-224-3121, both senators. It is really important that they hear from people right now, because let's face it, inside the Beltway, yeah, the media, the mainstream media has a very loud echo chamber effect going. But we can defeat this. We've done this before. And I, you know, honestly, we have the law on our side already. We have a Second Amendment which says shall not be infringed. I mean, that's the toughest law that you could ever imagine. And that's what we're going to hold their feet to the fire for.
And I applaud you and commend you for it. And I guess I'm not of the mind at all that we have to agree, you know, that something should be done, because I don't think there is ever a situation where doing something to be doing something is a good idea, especially when we're dealing with a fundamental right like this. So I think you guys have been leading the charge, and I would tell everybody in the audience, I hope you took down the numbers. If not, go to Gun Owners America website and get them, contact your representatives, tell them that this is what you want. And do not let the left in any way take away the one right that protects all the rest in the Bill of Rights. Thanks very much, Eric Pratt, Gun Owners of America, for the great work you guys do. Hey folks, it is Jim Hansen. We are back doing America First Radio, and today we are celebrating the weapons of war. And what better way to do that than to bring on another guy who I know from First Special Forces Group back in the Okinawa days, Pete Crittenden. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing fine. Are we on the air?
We are live at this point.
Then I'd like to send a little message out to some certain friends and colleagues of mine.
Do it.
John has a long mustache.
The chair
is against the wall.
You know, you remember you used to be called Crit Bolin after Mac Bolin. Remember that it was a series of books, the Mac Bolin books, because you were such a spy type guy. Everybody was convinced you were doing some kind of secret squirrel stuff. So whatever message you just sent out, I hope the mission is effective. Well, hey, you also have a book that I want to commend to people that is called Survival Mindset. And I think I want to start talking with you about that, because this is a book, you've got a lot of bushcraft knowledge. You've got a lot of the ability to stay alive. I was more, you know, kind of a hotel room, full per diem kind of urban cowboy guy. You know, I could get lost in a shopping mall. But you've actually got a book that talks about the virtues of knowing these survival skills in order to focus your life. And give me kind of your one over the world for survival mindset.
Well, first of all, you're quite right. My unofficial motto out there in Southeast Asia was go native early and often.
You were out there doing the Malaysian, you know, the scout survival, the tracking school, all that stuff.
I used to fade into the woodwork very easily over there because I grew up in Southeast Asia, of course. The premise of the book, it's about not only survival techniques. It's not just a field guide, but I start with the premise that we as human beings are still wild animals. But because of technology and modern life, we've gotten out of touch with our natural environment. And so what I suggest is, by getting back in touch with our natural side, the primitive side, it can help attune our instincts, our hunter-gatherer instincts. And you can apply this in the modern world, for situational awareness, personal security, and it's essentially the pathway, I believe, towards that, to developing that, is go out into the woods and learn how to live off the land.
You know, there used to be a concept of manliness that, and I don't mean to, you know, obviously I've talked to my wife, she's a former paratrooper, but there was an element of self-efficiency, self-sufficiency that was expected. That if you didn't know how to change a tire, you didn't know how to chop firewood, start a fire, catch a fish, you know, shoot a deer in a Kevlar vest with a 9mm and blow its lung out the other side. You know, all of those things, you should know those because, A, you may at some point need that knowledge. But even if you don't need that specific knowledge, it focuses your mind and gives you a more what the modern term I believe is based, is a more based lifestyle where you use your own capabilities first before you rely on the community or the culture or the government or anybody else.
Well, ultimately, the only person you can depend upon is yourself and perhaps your immediate family. It's anytime like outside forces come to help you out, that's icing on the cake, but don't be counting on that. I throw in another premise when I talk about man in the primitive state, and think about this for a moment. In nature, man in nature lived in hunter-gatherer groups of about 30 or 40, about the size of an infantry platoon. More than that, there's not enough resources to live off. You'll start starving out. Fewer than that, it's very difficult to live off the land to do all your hunting and gathering. So you live amongst this group of 30 or 40, roughly half male, half female, half adult, half juvenile. Adult is about the age of 12 to they die of old age between 25 and 35. And about once or twice a year, maybe three times a year, they get together with other groups. They have a powwow, or like they call it in Australia, a corroboree. They cross-pollinate, and then they go back on their way. And all your life, you're living amongst the same 30 or 40 people you've seen all your life. Okay, now think of us in the modern world. I live out in the country. I can go days, weeks without seeing anybody, unless I take a hike and go see my neighbor. But up the road, less than half an hour, is a little shopping center. It's got a supermarket, cafes, some shops. I can go there every day of the week and never see the same person. Now think about a guy who lives in a large American city or any city in the world. You can go up and down the street and not see the same person. You know, it's remarkable if you run into somebody you know. Okay, so you're surrounded by a whole sea of strangers. But we're still hardwired like the primitive man. The anthropologists and the biologists, they estimate that it takes about 25 to 35,000 years for an evolutionary trait to manifest itself. But we've only been away from the hunter-gatherer mode for about 12,000 years, about half that time. So we're still hardwired as we were in our natural state. But we're surrounded by this sea of strangers. And so is it any wonder that people are going nuts?
That's interesting. We were talking earlier with you know, the breakdown of the family structure and some of the reasons we end up with mass shooters. You know, they don't have that continual starting with a family, an intact family, but then a larger family group to provide that sort of structure on a continual basis as you try to socialize young males and females into a culture. We've lost that. And you're pointing out that that's a deeper thing than just the breakup of the American family. It's a sociological and biological thing.
It's a tribal identity.
Well, I think that... Go ahead.
I'm sorry. You and I are from a very powerful tribe. We're from the warrior class, okay? But there are other tribes. There's, the Pittsburgh Steelers fans. There's... You know, all these different groups that we have, classes and groups, guys who are in the Boy Scouts, church groups. So we can just go on forever and classify the groups of our society. And it is breaking down. People are growing up isolated, and yet they're still surrounded by tons of people that they do not associate with. Okay, well, that's enough for my sociological.
No, but I think you're on to something important, and I want to dig a little more into that after the break. This is Jim Hansen. We are talking to Pete Crittenden, author of Survival Mindset and former member of First Special Forces Group, the coolest of all Special Forces groups. We'll be back after the break.
Talk radio is still really popular, even in the internet age. What you are about to hear them say is mind-boggling.
Here's looking at you, Snowflake. America first.
Hey, folks. Jim Hansen back. We're doing America first. We're doing the Ode to Weapons of War. And we're talking to one of my compatriots from First Group, Pete Crittenden, who is the author of Survival Mindset. Now, during the break, Pete and I were talking a little bit about how the left is maneuvering us away from a survival mindset where you are responsible. You are the one you rely on. You have to be self-sufficient. You have to be capable, to a dependence mindset where you look to others. You look to primarily the state to take care of you, to do what you need to do. And it's social engineering. You know, they don't like the outcomes when we, the people, use our freedoms, like the Second Amendment. But the first is the one that really scares them. The Second Amendment only scares them because we use it to guarantee our right to use the first. But Pete, you know, what are your thoughts on the idea that the antidote to the dependence mindset is your very concept? You have to have a survival mindset.
Well, absolutely. And like I said before, I was talking about primitive humans, man in the primitive state. If you think the government's going to take care of you, look at the plight of the American Indian.
Yeah. Well, and look at any place that the Democrats in the state have been in charge for any length of time. Look at any of our major cities where they have put their ideas into practice and made the American, you know, the people living in those cities dependents of the government, and they turn into crap holes. You know, they kill initiative, they kill self-sufficiency, they kill the ability of people to rely on themselves and to fend for themselves. So I think if we – let's instill that. That's another thing. I've been talking about evangelizing for the Second Amendment. Let's evangelize for a based survival mindset and make ourselves responsible again.
Well, absolutely. My neighbors are Amish. All around my place are Amish farms. And you just have to look at them and see what self-sufficiency
right.
is like. It's not easy, but they are very successful.
And that doesn't mean you have to live an Amish lifestyle. Nothing wrong with it. You know, I have some really nice felling axe that I bought from Amish people because they build quality things that you can use. But it doesn't mean you can't enjoy the fruits of modern society. But if you have to start with the idea that those fruits exist not because they magically appeared from some government gift. You know, the government yep. didn't send a check and create these things. What they did was productive people took the initiative, built good things, and made the world a better place for us. And if we want that to continue, we need more people to be doing that.
Well, absolutely. This country, this great country, started out as a bunch of self-sufficient doers, pioneers, those sorts of people. And for the first 100-150 years of our history, we excelled, we prospered, we became the most powerful nation on earth. When the government stepped in and started taking care of us and handing out all this great socialism stuff, you'd think that those the cities that you mentioned would be socialist utopias.
Didn't quite work out that way, did it?
That's quite right.
Well, and I think that's a place where we can obviously differentiate ourselves. And the nice thing is they had control long enough to prove their ideas don't work. You know, it's not like you yeah. can't look at Detroit and San Francisco and all these other places where there are enclaves of rich liberals protected by assault weapons and their private security, and the rest of the people are living in squalor, crime and no jobs and crappy conditions. Because they trusted the government. And I think that's a place where I think, you know, the change in mentality to, as your book says, a survival mindset can save us from them.
Well, I was at a dinner party one time, and the discussion turned political, as it often does. And the lady next to me blurted out, from each according to his means to each according to their needs, which is pure Karl Marx,
yeah.
of course. And of course, my comment was, well, right, that's great. Have you seen anywhere where that actually works?
Yeah, that's one of those things. That, and again, now here's the interesting thing. When you first talked about the small hunter-gatherer groups, I almost just to be, because I'm that guy, I said, those sound kind of like communes. And I know, the funny... Yeah, the funny thing about communes is it works at that scale. You know, it doesn't work above that scale. You have to have a tie to the people that is so tight that you need it there. Well, hey, Pete, we got to go. Great having you on. Pete Crittenden, former First Special Forces Group, the coolest of all groups, author of Survival Mindset, which I think everyone should buy and read and take to heart and start learning. If you don't know how to kill a deer wearing a Kevlar vest, using a 9mm to blow lungs out, read the book and find out. This is Jim Hansen. We will be back after the break.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.